言论自由
It's Hari Raiki Azadi
Svoboda Slova
Free Speech Meinungsfreiheit
Özgür ifade
Azadi Bayan
We heard that you were charged with libel on two counts by the Supreme Court justice, once for an online article and once for the book Shadow of Doubt. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, before my book was released in March 2010, I wrote an article, an online article, on Justice Velasco of the Supreme Court. And I discussed or I narrated how he tried to help his son run for public office, run for a seat in the Philippine Congress. The code of conduct for Supreme Court justices and for other judges is quite strict. They're not supposed to dabble or help or participate in politics. But in this case, it's a father helping a son seek a position. So I think that the title of my story was about the ethical dangers of a Supreme Court justice helping his son run for politics.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't like that article, so he sued me for 13 counts of libel because the story appeared online for 13 days. Anyway, finally, when it was decided by the prosecutor, it decided that it was only one count of libel for one story. So I was able to post bail for... Mm-hmm. And avoided arrest.
Good.
And the other libel suit had to do with my book, Shadow of Doubt, which exposed the inner workings of the Supreme Court. And I included that online article as part of the epilogue. Plus, there were chapters on the book on his unethical behavior in the court. So again, he was very unhappy and he sued me. And so that was a total of two libel suits. But just to update you, I think about June of 2012, June this year, he decided to withdraw both cases. And so I'm libel-free now, certified libel-free.
Oh, very good. Congratulations. Right, I heard that you were also threatened, and I think this is quite common in the Philippines that journalists have to fear for their lives sometimes. Is that true?
Well... Journalists who work in remote communities or in the provinces outside of the capital of Manila face more danger than us journalists who live in the city because the national media are all based in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
So those who work in remote communities and who expose corruption are very vulnerable to intimidations and death threats. In my case, after the book was launched in March of 2010, I received continuing death threats for 3 days. I reported this to the police and we made it public because that's always our policy. Whenever there's any threat or intimidation, we should always make it public. That's the best protection we can get. So it stopped, mercifully, and there's mm-hmm. been no more threat. There have been
right.
no more death threats.
So I heard that libel is actually a criminal offense in the Philippines, which is not the case in a lot of countries like the UK or Germany, for example. Do you believe that this is a good way of drawing the line between privacy and the need to investigate stories of public interest, or do you believe it should be decriminalized?
I believe that libel should be decriminalized and that it should just remain as a civil case. I remember that a few years ago, our Supreme Court here, the Supreme Court Chief Justice said or encouraged judges to consider penalties of fines, just fining journalists, but not very big fees. So that was one positive step. But still, there needs to be a law that will decriminalize libel because in the past, there have been a few journalists here in the Philippines who were jailed. Someone was even jailed for 2 years for libel.
Why do you think the law has been created like that, that it is a criminal offense rather than a civil one?
I'm not very aware of the roots of the history of this libel case, but we usually follow the U.S. model, but I don't know if libel is criminal offense in the U.S. It's not, right? It's civil,
I think. Yeah, I think it's civil.
But we usually follow the U.S. model, and I think it has also to do with our history, our tradition of a very robust, very free press in the Philippines. There was a time before our authoritarian rule in 1971 when we were called the freest press in Asia. And that must have been a reaction also to that freedom to curtail what was seen then as a very, very, in fact, some called it a licentious press.
I assume this law has been used quite a lot to restrict the freedom of the press.
It has been used mainly to intimidate journalists. It's expensive you need money. I mean, you need money to defend yourself. You need to pay lawyers. It's time consuming. So usually when journalists are sued for libel, we tend to stay away from that story. We don't want to write about it anymore. So that's a way to stop journalists from pursuing certain issues. That's why it's been used liberally to intimidate us.
Could you tell us a bit about the media environment in the Philippines and what it is like to be a journalist?
Actually, in Southeast Asia, we're still the freest press. The traditional media, the newspapers, still have large circulations. We're not yet there. We're not yet in the stage wherein the newspapers will be folding up. Online media is growing a lot. In fact, the Philippines is always among the top 10 in the world's social media capitals in terms of use of Facebook and Twitter. We are very free here. The problem is we don't have a freedom of information law. Our access to documents is hampered because there is no law that will require government agencies to provide us certain documents. So here it's really whom you know that matters. If you have any connections to the police or the military or any government agency, we could get documents. But if not, we can't. Also here in the Philippines, it's really interesting to know that our politicians talk a lot. They will give you the best quotes in the world, the most colorful. But the problem is checking this out, because it's easy to speak up and to give colorful quotes, but are they telling the truth? So we need the paper trail to check what they're telling us. And that's where the problem lies. We can get some documents, but without the FOI law, we're limited.
Well, one of our principles on the website reads, we require and create open, diverse media so we can make well-informed decisions and participate fully in political life. Do you agree with this? And what do you think is the role of the media in the Philippines?
Well, I definitely agree with that. And I see the role of the media here as being a public space for dialogue. Of course, basically, it's really to keep the public informed so they can come up with enlightened decisions when it comes to issues of public interest. Also, it has to be a bridge. It has to be a space where people can talk and exchange views without being too partisan about it. But there's a problem here in the Philippines which is not unique in other parts of the world, which is similar rather to other parts of the world. The ownership of big media here, of newspapers, of TV stations, and radio is limited to a few conglomerates. So there tends to be a narrowing of voices. We hope that there will be more independent media outfits run by maybe in the future universities, civil society groups, journalist groups, so that there will be a representation of more voices. Mm-hmm. That's the goal we aim for in the Philippines. I belong to an independent news outlet. It's still small, but we're growing fast. We're online. But we like to have a diversity of opinions and views here. Otherwise, if big business owns almost all the big media, then it won't be a democracy after all.
Yes. So the media is largely owned by large corporations.
That's right. But that's not the only problem. The problem is these corporations are engaged in other businesses. For example, a telecoms company owns a TV network, has shares in two major newspapers, and is a big advertiser. So that this company tends to dominate. Another company which owns a major newspaper is into property development. Another is into banking. There is only one print newspaper that is purely into publishing. The rest have vested interests. So that situation, hopefully, should change in the future.
How do you think is the best way to foster independent media?
Like in my group, Rappler, we have gathered small businessmen and investors. And then we get advertising, and we feel we are not beholden to anyone because the investors are not into big vested interests.
Mm-hmm.
In another part of the Philippines, in Mindanao, the southern part, there's a cooperative there. They run an online a news website on Mindanao issues, and they're not funded by any big business. But these are small groups. However, that is the way forward, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And concerned citizens could help sustain this independent news organizations.
Do you think those are the main obstacles to freedom of expression in the Philippines? Or are there any other restrictions that you would like to talk about?
Yes. Well, there is no state censorship here. I think a restriction is our very slow judicial system. Sometimes there's corruption there, so they are not able to convict killers, those who murder journalists.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a factor in free expression. It's the slow pace of justice in the Philippines.
There has been an international outcry over the cybercrime law that is proposed. Could you tell us a little bit about that law?
Yes. You know, we were not watching because the journalists were all covering a historic event, the impeachment of the first ever impeachment of our Chief Justice. While we were not watching, Congress passed this cybercrime law, which we now call the Big Brother Law, and libel online is sanctioned by more number of years in jail than libel committed in print.
Mm-hmm.
It's more severe. And there's even what we call prior restraint, where our Justice Department can take down a website that it deems to be containing libelous articles. So that's they call the takedown clause. It gives them power to do that. Another scary provision of the cybercrime law is it goes against privacy. It allows a government agency to monitor real-time traffic of information. So now, the Supreme Court has suspended the law for 120 days while Congress seeks to amend it. So we're hopeful that by next year, by January, we will have an amended cybercrime law wherein the libel provision will no longer be restrictive.
So it is not so much a protection against, for example, online bullying, as it is actually an intrusion into the privacy of people and a restriction on their freedom of expression and pass on information.
Yes, the provisions on libel are exactly what you said. They have that kind of impact. But the other parts of the law are good. They are able to help law enforcers go after those who perpetrate child pornography, for example, and cyberbullying. But for the provisions on libel, this remain questionable until we see changes next year.
Do journalists in the Philippines find ways around the restrictions that you have spoken about and are able to report and speak their mind?
Oh, yes, definitely. Even with the unsolved murders of journalists, a number of journalists continue to expose corruption. Sometimes they don't use their names because they become very vulnerable. Or sometimes they, after they write stories, they move to the city for a while. Or there is also a very efficient network of journalists in the Philippines called National Union of Journalists, and they have an alert system. We're very thankful for that alert system. They alert the media about threats and also authorities. So yes, a number of journalists are able to go around the restrictions.
What are the main hot topics in the Philippines? Corruption, maybe religion? What other topics are really interesting and maybe very sensitive?
Yeah, it's never a dull place here. Corruption is a big issue because our president has vowed to fight corruption, and he has, to a certain extent, succeeded by making government agencies more transparent, putting all the data on the website. As you said, religion is also a hot topic because there is a pending bill in Congress to pass a reproductive health bill that will require sex education for children, for elementary school students, and for the state to provide contraceptive devices to couples. The insurgency, the Muslim insurgency, is still a hot topic. We have recently arrived at a tentative peace agreement with the Muslim rebels. But covering them can also pose dangers for journalists. I think those poverty, of course, is always an issue here, but I don't think it leads to dangerous reporting.
Mm-hmm. Have technologies like Twitter and the internet changed the media environment and also free speech?
You know, the internet is a blessing, and also it's a blessing in the sense that it has opened up the media. I mean, the editors are no longer telling the citizens what to do. The citizens can speak, can talk back. So that's the advantage. The feedback is instant. The problem is the Philippines has a low internet penetration rate. It's just 30% of a population of 100 million. So that's still limited space, but it's already doing progress in terms of triggering a lot of feedback from people. And that's why we value this new space. That's why there's a lot of outcry against the cybercrime law. And you were asking, how has this changed Philippine media?
Yeah.
How has the news websites now are starting to become a force in national media. Before, we were looked upon as the mosquito press, you know, just buzzing and being the minority. Now, we're becoming a force to contend with, and public officials and citizens are not taking notice of what news comes from the online, from news websites.
Okay. Has it also led to a rise in citizen journalism, that people themselves can spread information and news and maybe inform the public?
That's true. In fact, there are a lot of citizen journalists now in the Philippines. However, we the professional journalists, still need to vet and to check the information coming from citizen journalists. But we welcome information, we welcome their video, but before posting these, we need to check and vet so that this will not lead to misinformation, especially in times of disasters. But really, they've been very helpful when it comes to disasters, man-made or otherwise.